Chapter 23. I just want to talk a little bit tonight about being people of principle. We had a pastor in our area down in Washington, D.C., who had a Christian day school, and they used to talk that he was a man of many principles, usually one a year. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a different principle. One of the problems that I think is floods into our church and spills over from the world we live in is that nobody wants to act on principle anymore. People want to act on all kinds of motivations. They want to act because of a cause. They want to act to win. They want to act for their own self-benefit. But they don't want to live on principle. And men who live on principle are treated with suspicion. When it comes to causes, you can do anything, and as long as it's for a cause, you'll be respected in the United States. You know, some person can, Kevorkian, has a flood of people who cheer him and who pay his bail. And there's a man who, he's acting on a cause. And there's a man who has advocated many, many things for many, many years. And if people knew some of the things he'd been advocating for years. Medical testing on condemned inmates, using them for all kinds of tests and whatnot. People who are condemned to death. Well, why let them die that way? Why not use them for medical purposes? Very Nazi-like things that he has been... But the cause and the fact that he has a cause attracts public attention. Kind of interesting to me that in sports, you can do and be just about the worst human being in the world, but because you want to win and you're dedicated to winning, well, that's wonderful. People will accept you. Some coaches in sports, there's a coach who coaches one of the teams in Indiana, a basketball team in Indiana, who's just a miserable human being, miserable and known for it, but he's a winner. And what difference does it make? He's a winner. And that seems to be that America doesn't care anymore for principle. Somebody who acts because it's right. There's a president of a college, Dr. Bob Jones Sr., who just had a way of turning a phrase. And his students could always come up with, I wish they could come up with more sometimes than what he said, but what he had to say was phenomenal sometimes. And he preached a whole message on just one phrase, do right. You know, anything you're going to do, if you want to have one principle to live by, do right, he said. And this passage, that pretty well sums up what this passage is talking about. Do right no matter what. I'm just going to begin reading in verse 23, and I guess I'll read from the King James Version. Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. In other words, don't line up with a lot of people to do something that's wrong. That's what decline after many means. It means lean yourself towards and become involved with a lot of people. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. If thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him again. If thou see an ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden, and wouldst forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help with him. Thou shalt not wrest the judgment of the poor in his cause. Keep thee far from a false matter. And the innocent and the righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. And thou shalt take no gift, for the gift blindeth the wise and perverteth the words of the righteous. Also thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of the stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Some simple rules here for how you're to live. And what he's trying to say all the way through here is you live by a principle. No matter what the circumstances are, I expect integrity. It's a sick thing that Americans don't expect integrity from their elected officials. It's really sick. We expect anything but integrity. We joke about it, but there are no scandals anymore. What's bad enough to be scandalous? We have a Senator, Bob Packwood, who is involved in all kinds of reported licentious behavior. And people are after him and saying, how can you serve? How can you serve? We've got a president that there are reports of licentious behavior, and his one of his secretaries, the Secretary of Housing, basically said, well, you knew he was like this when you voted for him. This was all discussed because of the mistress he had before. You knew about this and you still voted for him. It's one thing when your president is reported to be involved in immorality, which, by the way, any of the prophets would have condemned and spoken to. John the Baptist got in trouble for telling the ruler of his day that you're living in immorality. But so I don't think it's wrong to mention the sins of a president, especially when the Bible speaks against them. But what's so damaging is that other officials whom he has appointed say, America doesn't care if this man is immoral or not. You voted for him knowing he was immoral. And you know, that's pretty much true. There weren't too many people who didn't know about those things. We don't care about principle. And here, the writer is trying to say, you've got to live by integrity no matter what the circumstances. Notice, you shall not raise a false report. When you stand up to speak on a matter, you tell the truth no matter what. Now, you're not supposed to speak the truth in instances where you're not supposed to speak. Okay? Speaking the truth doesn't mean saying and standing up and talking on every occasion. There are times when you may know the truth, but you can keep your mouth closed. Two people talking about something that went on, you don't necessarily have to say and tell what you know in the matter. If it's gossip, you don't need to participate in gossip. Somebody has done something wrong, it's not up to you necessarily to stand up and tell everybody about it. Speaking the truth does not mean every time I stand up telling everybody everything I know. There are times when the Bible says love covers a multitude of sins, and you can just keep quiet. This is talking about a judicial proceeding where you're called under perjury, under your responsibility to tell the truth. And then when that happens, you say everything you know and what you know. How many people would do that? How many people would do that when it involved their children? When it involved people close to them? How many people withhold truth or don't want to face truth when it's somebody they care for? The Bible, that's a false report. That is giving a false oath. That's taking the Lord's name in vain in the Old Testament. The Bible says you're a man of principle and you speak the truth no matter what when it is time to speak. The truth comes out of your lips. It's interesting. Don't put thine hand with a wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Don't ever find yourself in the place where somebody is using you to spread something that's false. One of the advantages of public TV is that they'll put things on TV that won't be shown on the networks. And there's a real interesting show. Is Channel 13 public or cable? There's a real interesting show that I would recommend you see. It's called The Myth of Heterosexual AIDS. And one of the most incredible things that's happening, I was called on. I used to work with Campus Bible Fellowship extensively, and I'd speak on different campuses. I did on three occasions. Once I traveled to Kent State to speak on AIDS. And one of the amazing things is the lies that are being told about AIDS. And this report is kind of good because these aren't facts that nobody knows. They're facts that people don't want to face. A lie that's being told about AIDS is that people aren't aware of AIDS. We need more AIDS awareness. Who can be alive in America and not be aware of AIDS? I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. You know, we're aiming our advertising. Who is the advertising aimed at? Teens and people. You can get AIDS. It's amazing. Do you know, if you're a heterosexual and don't live with a homosexual, I mean, cohabit with one, or an intravenous drug user, if you're heterosexual and don't have a regular intimate relationship with a high-risk person, your chances of contracting AIDS in America as a man, for instance, are less than your chance of contracting breast cancer for a man. Do you realize that? Do you realize that last year in all of America, the number of heterosexual, and we don't even know how many of those were not telling the truth necessarily about their relationships, they might have been covering it up, were less than 100. And there were more men who contracted breast cancer in the United States than heterosexual men who contracted AIDS. The high-risk groups that we should be targeting are homosexuals and intravenous drug users. But nobody would... And you know what the sad thing is? There are a lot of homosexual men who are dying because we're not targeting them. I don't think we should just... In this Christian attitude sometimes that AIDS is a homosexual problem, so let them all die. We should never be guilty of saying something that sick. You know, we should be concerned about every... Christ is concerned about them. And any poor... God didn't look at a person who came to him with a disease and said, that disease is your fault, I'm not going to heal you. Remember what happened when the disciples came to Christ? I'm getting off the track here. And said, who did sin, this man or his parents? You know why? Blindness was often the result of venereal disease. In fact, I don't know if they still do it, but when children are born, they put drops in the child's eyes. You know why? In case the mom had venereal disease. Maybe the mom didn't know that, but that's why they put the drops in the eyes, because it can cause blindness. And so the disciples were wondering, when they brought the blind person, should we deal with this person's sin? Is it the result, this person's disease, if it's a result of sin, well, maybe we shouldn't touch it. Maybe this person deserves it, because their parents were sinners. And Jesus said, neither. It's for the glory of God. I have a purpose, and I can be glorified in it. The problem that I'm really emphasizing here, though, is nobody wants to speak the truth about AIDS. And the big thrust that we see aimed at teenagers and all of this and AIDS, that is a myth. That is a lie. The idea that we're not spending enough money on AIDS. More money is spent on AIDS than any other disease in America. More people die of diabetes in the United States than die of AIDS. And yet we spend about one-tenth the money on diabetes. And so what's happening, and it's funny, Christians have picked up all this on AIDS, and we get, because it's connected with a moral thing, and yet nobody wants to just simply look at the facts and say, wait a second. And the sad thing is people are dying. People are dying of AIDS because we're not targeting the right group. I mean, if we have a childhood disease, we wouldn't inoculate adults for it, correct? I mean, if you have a childhood disease going on and you spend all your money inoculating adults, and children will die because they're not the emphasis. And so it's interesting, and these are some things that really bother me. But what's happening is that for the sake of a cause, for the sake of a cause, and AIDS has become a cause, it's become a religious cause for Hollywood, there's lying going on and deception. And sometimes I think even Christians are involved in it, because we look at AIDS as a sign of God's judgment. Well, there's more venereal disease in America than AIDS. Is that God's judgment? Well, yes and no. Sins bring about payment. But I don't think that we should be contributing to a lie and contributing to a problem. We ought to take some time to find out what's going on here. I think what he's trying to say is, don't band together with people. Don't be part of somebody else's lie. It's not simply you tell a lie because you, for your ends. Don't be part of somebody else's lie. And in fact, notice what he says. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Don't get yourself caught up with a crowd. Don't lie just because you're part of a crowd. That is so hard to teach our teens. Stand up and say what's right. And it's sometimes so hard for adults to practice the same thing. To say, I'm just going to tell you what I think, and this is the truth. God has blessed me in that area, that I have seen the price I have paid for not saying what I thought was right. In fact, maybe he's blessed me overabundantly when I come home and tell my wife, boy, I feel good about that meeting. I said what I thought. You didn't. You didn't say what you really thought. Oh, I told them what I thought. And I, oh, no. Oh, boy. When are the phone calls going to start? You know, when are we going to have the fallout from that? But it's a lesson I've learned. You don't go along with the crowd, and you don't silence what you're supposed to say. I don't care, by the way, whether they're Christians or non-Christians. I'm not just talking about standing up to the world. There are so many times when things go on among Christians and we have to say, this is what I see to be the truth. This is what I know of the truth. This is evidence, by the way. None of us knows the truth completely. All I can tell you is what I've seen. Correct? I can give you evidence in a matter, but the truth contains more than just my evidence. I got to listen to other people's evidence and put it together. But I'm going to say what I've seen, and I'm not going to be influenced by my peers. I'm not going to go along with the crowd. That's what it means, thou shalt not decline after many. It means be bent towards them. Be drawn to whatever the group says. It's so hard for human beings to stand apart from the group and to actually stand up and say what's right. You know, it's interesting. One of the things this show sticks in my mind, they were saying, you know, how many people would get involved in a diabetes quilt? You know the AIDS quilt? Maybe you've never even heard of it. It was on Cornell campus to raise money and to raise, quote-unquote, AIDS awareness. And yet, when you have another cause, people won't get involved in it. The fact that a lot of people are involved with AIDS draws other people to itself. Nothing succeeds like success. A lot of people are involved, a lot of people get involved. Well, sometimes our tendency is to be drawn towards what other people say and to listen to it. And I think we've got to say, what's the evidence? What do I see? What do I know? And I'm not going to be drawn after the group. But the other side is true. Notice what he says. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. You're not to change the truth just because somebody's disadvantaged. You're not to look at a man and to pity him and therefore to make him an exception and say, I won't speak the truth. You're not to pity a man for the fact that he is poor and then not speak the truth that you knew about the fact that he stole. You're not to show favoritism to the poor in the cause of justice. America's in a lot of trouble. We got a statue of justice with a blindfold over her eyes. Justice is blind. And yet that's not true anymore. We believe in affirmative action, whereby if somebody is disadvantaged, we're willing to weigh justice in their favor. That's a dangerous, dangerous principle. And the Bible forbids it. You are not to countenance the poor man. You're not to show favoritism to the poor man because he's poor. You're not to look at somebody and say, well, I know this isn't right, and I'm willing to change the truth and to change the facts simply because of your situation being poor. The Bible forbids it. Justice means it's right, it's wrong, and here's the truth as I know it. But in America, that runs so contrary to our grain. We pick up the cause. And people need, and by the way, the Bible talks about protecting the poor later on, but you don't protect the poor in the matter of justice. You can protect the poor economically. You can help the poor by giving of yourself. But when it comes to justice, justice is blind. You don't incline towards the many and be drawn towards the many. And you don't pick up a cause for somebody. My mother was an interesting case, and I learned a lot from her. But my mom did not operate on this principle. She found who the bird with the broken wing was. She found who the disadvantaged, and then she was all for them. Mom knew about more disadvantaged groups of people than I've ever heard in my entire life. She'd watch something on TV that had to do with some people being oppressed, and Mom would pick up the cause. You know, she'd be out there leading the flag, you know, and doing whatever. And you want to say, you know, okay, Mom, because you never tell your mom she's wrong. You have to understand that principle. Not like telling you I told my mom she was wrong, actually. But in my mind, I said, Mom, you know, the Bible says you can't do that. Right is right and wrong is wrong. And I don't care who is the disadvantaged and who is the hurting party. You don't show favoritism to them. By the way, in churches, that often happens. Churches have to learn that when you do things within the church, you don't act upon emotion and you don't act upon pity. The first principle is I'm going to do what's right, no matter what the circumstances are, because you pay a heavy price the other way. Notice, he then moves to something that I think is even more difficult. If you meet your enemy's ox or ass growing astray, thou shalt surely bring it back again. Principle takes over. You watch his ox wandering off. And by the way, that's a lot of money to a Jew. That's a sizable investment. Their ox is worth more to them than your car is worth to you. Okay, so that's a sizable investment. Today, when people have a farm, either they don't really need their ox, they don't plow with it, I really hope. You know, not many people, you never did milk an ox successfully, but, you know, cows or oxes or whatever, but you don't, you know, you just don't have need. When you see a farmer, he's usually got a bunch of animals, and the loss of any one isn't crucial to him. It may cut his profit out, but it's not crucial to him. But in those days, you didn't find big farms and large herds. A farmer might have two oxen. Might. Tiny. And that was crucial. And you see that ox walking away, and he's your enemy. And you don't think in your mind, well, God's getting even with him. You know, he's getting what he deserves. You don't rejoice. You have a responsibility, no matter if it's your friend or your enemy, to take that ox back to him, to go out of your way to help him. This is one of the concrete examples of love your enemy in the Old Testament. When Jesus preached love your enemy, it wasn't new to him. It was the intent of God in the Old Testament. But the Jews had systematically ignored it. And so this great new teaching that people thought of Christ, all Christ was saying was, get back to what God intended in the Bible. Don't use your... And so often the Jews would take the approach, and we do today, love your enemies and hate your friends. We build up this popular myth, like, be the kind of person that's a good friend and a worse enemy, so nobody wants to be your enemy. Well, the Bible says you act on principle. You see something going on, whether it's your enemy or whether it's your friend, if it's wrong, you correct it. At the turn of the century, in Toronto, the city was moving to prevent the Jehovah Witnesses from witnessing door to door. And it was the action of the Baptist churches that stopped the city from doing that. And the Baptist, if there's anybody who's our enemy, it's a cult, like the Jehovah Witnesses. But the Baptist said, that's wrong. That's not right. Anybody has a right to spread their religion. And they weren't just acting in self-interest. Well, if they do it to Jehovah Witnesses, they'll do it to us. They said, that is not right, and we are not going to let something wrong happen to our enemy. I'm going to act on principle. So often that we act on principle when it's ourselves or a friend, but when it's an enemy, well, we're willing to let the matter slide. Notice the next one. If you see the ass of him that hateth thee. Interesting. He hates you. He can't stand you. It's not that you hate him. You know, maybe then you could say, well, it's supposed to make you feel better about him. He hates you. He wants nothing to do with you, lying under his burden. In other words, what happens, you've got the animal overburdened and he tips over. And he can't get up again because he weighs too much. Sometimes they would have the animal, they would load him up while he was down because you don't want to lift up all the stuff. They would often do that with camels, for instance. This is not a camel they're talking about here. And then they'd have him stand up. You know, so you could load him when it's low and raise him up like a pickup truck, you know. You don't want to load it and stick it over the head. You put it on down here. But he can't get up. He's fallen over to the side because the load was so heavy or he can't get up. It says, if you're thinking about not helping the man, looking, not helping the guy, don't think about it. You're surely to help him. The guy needs help, you help him. Have you ever thought about that? We talk to our kids often. You know, why don't you do this job? That's my brother's job. He didn't do it. Why should I do it? Well, what about helping him out? Help him. Do you know how he treated me today? Why should I help him? Because God says to do it. That's why. You know, loving your neighbor is not just, yeah, I love my neighbor. Help him. You know, he got into that problem. He's hating me. How can I? The Bible says it's a principle. You help the people who need help. That's a Bible rule. People who need help, you help them as much as it's in your power. And if you're even thinking about not helping them, that's wrong. Are you acting on principle or are you acting on friendship? Friendship is wonderful, but you don't live according to friendship. You live according to principle. Notice, thou shalt not wrest the judgment of the poor in his cause. This is protecting the poor. You're not to take advantage of... Wrest means twisting something, like wrestling. You know, you're twisting the other person up, hopefully. You're doing it to him, you know, rather than vice versa. But you're not to twist their judgment. You're not to take advantage of people because they're poor. Keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and the righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. You know, we have to learn that you don't have to be in the thick of something that's wrong to get in trouble. you want to keep as far as you can from something that's going on wrong. You know, the mud will splash a long ways and you don't want to be near it. A good place to start practicing this, by the way, is at work. You know, things go on at work and you've got to learn, I don't even want to be near it. You don't have to be involved in it to get in trouble with it. I want to keep as much of a distance I can from people who are cheating the boss, and it happens all the time, from people who are doing things wrong, from people who are embezzling, from people who are misusing. By the way, on the other hand, I would keep far from employers who are doing that to people. What if your boss tells you to do something that's wrong to other people, to your customers? I'd keep a good distance from that, because they're not going to blame your boss only. Keep as far as you can from somebody who's taking advantage. That's what this is talking about, taking advantage of somebody, because it'll splash all over you. And so often, people just don't recognize that. I just don't understand why politicians, for the sake of politics, can't learn this principle. Why do they have to get into trouble with their finances? Why do they have to take those campaign contributions that they don't deserve? Don't they understand how badly they'll get splashed? Look at how many senators lost, and congressmen as well, lost their jobs because of the checkbook scandal. Some of them got into trouble because they knew that things were going on and didn't say anything about it. Now, the sergeant at arms about 3 weeks ago, he was just sent to jail for 5 years, the guy who was in charge of the House Bank, for embezzling. But some of the senators were writing overdrafts and knew it on purpose, borrowing money without interest is what it is. And they were not the ones embezzling, but they were profiting from it. And why didn't they know enough to say, somebody's going to catch up to this? I'm going to stay away. They were taking advantage of you and me, is what they were doing. And we can't have that sort of thing. And as Christians, learn to keep thee far from false matter. Look at verse 8. Thou shalt in no wise take a gift. It means a bribe. For the gift blindeth the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Oh boy. Bribery and the underhandedness that goes on in our government is sickening. And in the first year we moved to Pennsylvania from New York State, that year, PennDOT, the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, had 30 officials indicted for malfeasance and mishandling of money. 30 of them in 1 year. I don't know if they made a dent in the problem, but they got 30 of them. We were in the district where our congressman was Dan Flood. Now, I don't know if you remember this guy. This guy looked like the sleaziest used car dealer you've ever seen. He had this mustache, this waxed mustache. He had gray hair and a black mustache, waxed mustache that curled up. Looked like Snidely Whiplash, you know. And he would stand up there. I don't know if you remember the scandal. This is 20 years ago we're talking about. But he was in his district, and he said, you can do what you want to me. The people are going to reelect me because I bring money back. And we saw editorials in the paper that basically said, why are we concerned about the fact that he was taking money to do things like, if you gave him so much money, he would see that your son got a scholarship. If you wanted a certain kind of position, you'd give him so much money. The town we were in Hazleton, one of the teachers would say, if you don't have $2,500, don't even think about getting hired as a teacher in this town. That's how much money you need to pay to get to officials just to get considered. And of course, the quality of the teachers was right up there. You know, that was really disturbing. The English teacher from Hazleton kept on saying, use guys. You know, all the use guys. He was the English teacher. Whew. I don't want to see what his failures were like. You know, the people who couldn't pass his English exams. But the gift was perverting things. And this Dan Flood, the people, though, in the editorials were saying, hey, he was the one, he managed to get this high-powered atomic energy plant that's down in Berwick. He was the one who brought into their area and all the jobs. He brings jobs and he brings money. We don't care if he gets a little on the side. He deserves it. Hey, it's a bribe. It's a bribe and it's wrong. It's perverting justice. That's what happens when we send our men to Congress. All of our men go to Congress, and we tell them what's right is that we don't have this enormous national debt. On the other hand, we want all the good jobs to come to our district. Cut it, but don't cut it in our district. We want you to go there, and as soon as they go, they're voting on national policy, but they don't have the nation's interests at heart, do they? They've got us at heart, their local district. That's a bit of a problem. That's a bit of a problem. Because those are the men who get involved in bribery, because they've got to bring money back, and they've got to have contractors, and they've got to do all of these things. We have some real problems in our system. And I think sometimes Christians get bribed. Hey, you know, that job that keeps you out of church on Sunday, it looks awful good sometimes, doesn't it? Really looks like you need it. The promotion, the next step up the list, is going to mean extra responsibilities, which is going to mean you really can't do the Lord's work the way you know you should. Not just somebody else thinks, you know you should. You don't think that's a bribe? You don't think that that's not intended, maybe not by your boss, but about by Satan, that's not intended as a bribe to get you to turn your attention to something different? You know, we've got to be so cautious about the things that bribe us. We sometimes do this to our children. I'm guilty of it. You know, a bribe gets a lot done with little kids. True? True? Ask the grandmothers. They know the value of a good bribe, you know. Yeah. The trouble with dads is we just don't know how to bribe well. You know, moms, they know the art of a bribe. And so we talk about that, but it is a fine line. Isn't it true? If you're going to give a child, and let me be cautious here, I'm not saying that rewarding them is wrong all the time, but a child has to know that there are some things you do just because it's right. You don't get a return on it. You're not going to get something out of this one. This is not being done for your benefit. This is not being done where you get anything out of it. You just do this because it's right. Well, we have chores around the house, and our kids laugh when it comes time to add up their allowance. And they tell me, Dad, we know that you're not paying us for our chores. And we know that for a fact, because we've added up our allowance. And, you know, they're thinking of swimming over to Mexico to get a good job compared to the allowance they're getting from me, you know. They know that. But, and again, we've got to be so cautious. We raise our kids, and everything they do doesn't have a reward, because not everything in life gives a reward. There are some things you do that cost you because it's right. And we teach our children that I want you to be people of principle. And so often as parents, we're so interested in getting what's good for our child and what's best. We want them to get in the best classes. We want them to do well in sports. We want them to do well with their friends. And they can get the idea right away that life centers around them. And we've got to tell them, there are some things that could be to your benefit, like a bribe. But you don't take them because there's a principle that's more important. That doesn't come from the church and the pastor. That usually comes from the parents teaching that. And then verse 9. Also, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of the stranger, seeing you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Let me give you an area where this is really, really tough. We have a real problem in America and California. Our strangers are illegal aliens. And so there are two sides to the matter. On the one hand, illegal aliens are treated better in California than citizens. I don't know if you know it, but illegal aliens are entitled to free medical care. And, of course, there's no citizen in the United States who's entitled to free medical care. So I guess the thing to do if you're in a real medical crisis is move to Mexico, get a citizenship, and swim, you know, back over here. But that's the way it is. And they had a long discussion one night on the news about it. But there's a problem we've got to be cautious of. People who are living in our land and are not citizens, we've got to be cautious we don't take advantage of them. How would we do that? Well, if they come over here to work and you pay them substandard wages, that's taking advantage of them. Now, we can see that it is also possible that they can take advantage of us. But be cautious. Sometimes we only see the side that we want to see. But the Old Testament constantly says, be careful. Don't oppress the stranger. Many times the strangers were also moneymakers within the society. They would have colonies of foreign traders. who would live right in towns and settlements. You would have a colony of, for instance, the Babylonians would send out, and they'd have a little quarter of people who would deal with trading in the cities, not so much in America, but over in Asia and sometimes in Africa. This is the quarter where they'll do the handling of meats. This is the little section where the people who work with metals. This is the section where the people who are tanners, and everybody lives in their own sections, and they'd have traders' colonies, and they would be foreigners. Because your people, it wasn't like today's commerce where you'd have a trader from each town, you'd have a group of traders. That's what Abraham was. And you had to protect them. You can't take advantage of them. By the way, it's sad, but that's what happened to the Jews. When they were living in Poland, they lived in their little enclaves as strangers in every one of the lands. And they were the merchants. They were the traders. They were the people with international connections. They were the educated. They were the financiers. The Catholic Church forbid people to deal with interest. They called it usury. Okay? So who lent the money? Who were the traders? It was the Jews. And then who got blamed for all the evils? And who were the... Well, every time the peasants were so poor, it wasn't the rich who they blamed, it was the Jews, the moneylenders. And so that's what... So much of the terror that went on, the pogroms for the Jews, were because they were living as strangers in somebody else's land, who were Christians and who wouldn't observe this rule. You know, we've got to learn that principle is what we live by. And in this matter of justice, it's not looking for who needs the most help. It's not simply looking for that person who evokes the most sympathy. It's saying there's a value to what's right and what's wrong, and I'm going to live by it. Let's pray, then we'll have a business meeting. Oh, Father, I praise you and thank you for your word. The things that I'm not doing right, where I'm not practicing justice, where I'm biased, Father, where I haven't spoken up as I ought, I pray you would work in my heart. May, Father, among the unsaved that I live, may they see that it's principle and not self-interest that motivates me. Father, may we show a love to our enemies, and that people can see in our lives that the kindness we do isn't just reserved for Christians. It isn't just reserved for family and friends. And what we say and do, may it be done because of Christ and in His name. Indeed, it's in His name we pray.